JG1. Number 11B.
All right, so a visible idea. Let's look on page, we'll just go quickly and then so we can go on to our meal. Page 560 to see what it means about a visible idea. I have written, jotted down 560-18. Let's see if that yields.
What page?
560, line 18. All right. So we read here,
60.
Again, without a correct sense of the highest visible idea, we can never understand the divine principle. So we see then that that spiritual idea takes the form of a true mental form, and a spiritual idea also takes the form of the highest visible idea. The idea is visible. And as we certainly know, it's incorporeal. All right, so we take the last reference, taking some pertinent references which show how the idea is dynamic and changes its form. Oh, there's some nice ones there. I especially like page 258, line around line 13, I believe, 258. All right, so reading there on line 13, we see it says, God expresses in man the infinite idea, forever developing itself, broadening, and rising higher and higher from a boundless form. Certainly shows that that idea is dynamic and it changes form. It's always developing itself and broadening and rising higher and higher from the boundless form. And we now know that it does that through that self-organizing system, that self-organizing feedback system, that non-linear system. Okay, and I think the last reference we'll take is page 50321. Here it shows how the idea is dynamic and changes its form.
503?
Yes. Uh-huh. Starting on line 20, it says that the immortal in divine mind presents the idea of God, first in light, second in reflection, and third in spiritual and immortal forms of beauty and goodness. So therefore we see how it's dynamic and changes its form through the first is light of mind, and then takes on the form of spirit as reflection, and then the idea takes on third the form of soul as immortal forms of beauty and goodness. So that certainly is something that we will see when we take the concept of the levels, how this idea takes on many forms and yet to express itself. Now we want to just this evening take a look at that point in the study questionnaire of how an idea can be characterized in the chapter of the textbook. That would be then in the questionnaire on page 8.1A, which says, how is the idea characterized in each chapter of the textbook? Study the references for idea in each chapter and ask, which specific characteristic of the term idea is emphasized in each chapter, except glossary? This shows us how each chapter brings out a different characteristic of the term idea. This is really then how we scientifically can go through a chapter and see how Mrs. Eddy doesn't give a linear definition. She just doesn't have somewhere, well, idea is. And then that suffices for the whole meaning of the term. We know that her textbook is a structural textbook, and we know that, therefore, she defines things structurally, and that a definition then is a structural definition. It's a pattern. It's the pattern of God. So Because idea is a pattern of God, it has many, many facets to it. And so if we see this, how idea runs through the chapter of the textbook, we will look then on page 9 of the study questionnaire, where I've shown there most of the references to idea in the textbook. There's just a few that aren't mentioned. There, quite interestingly enough, prayer has no references. Then we come to Atonement and Eucharist, and I just want to ask for research from you. I don't think we need to look up all those many, many references to idea in a chapter. There are so many. But in your work, could you hear what perhaps the overall tone to idea would be in Atonement and Eucharist? Were you able to do that, or would you like to look at a few references to see? I think then, let's try a few. Let's look at 29:17. We'll just pick a few randomly out and see if we can pick up some kind of a melody that's being played. So here we see that it says that the Virgin Mother conceived this idea of God and gave to her ideal the name of Jesus, that is Joshua or Savior. Okay, that doesn't quite define the idea. Let's go on to 29. But you just listen to that melody. 28. The Christ dwelt forever an idea in the bosom of God, the divine principle of the man Jesus, and woman perceived the spiritual idea, though at first faintly developed. Okay, let's try 32. Hence he could give a more spiritual idea of life than other men, and could demonstrate the science of love, his father or divine principle. Let's try page 38:26. He unveiled the Christ, the spiritual idea of divine love. Are we hearing any
the
melody?
Christ idea.
The Christ idea? Uh-huh, okay. We can more or less hear that that the Christ is the beginning to hear more on the Christ in relationship to idea, aren't we? All right. Let's take a look at 39:26. To break this earthly spell, mortals must get the true idea and divine principle of all that really exists and governs the universe harmoniously. So when I went through the references, I felt that that was the point, that the Christ, huh, is the true idea of God. And over they would show that the idea of God is to get the true idea of God. Christ is the true idea of God. The spiritual idea of man or of being is the true idea. Or it would talk about the true idea of Christian healing. So she always would equate there that Christ then is the true idea of God. Gita?
I felt a sense of birthing the idea.
Yes.
Yes,
uh-huh. The true conception. I think that's the point.
But it's almost the unfolding of the spirit.
It's, yes, uh-huh.
Spiritual idea.
Yes, the true.
And understanding really because of the standpoint of the chapter, too.
Yes. That I think I felt the same thing, that the Christ is the true idea, and that the Virgin Mary had given birth to that real idea, or true idea of God.
Mm-hmm. She broke in real easy, gently.
She breaking in very gently. So let's just jot down there those points for Atonement and Eucharist that. The point here is that Christ is the true idea of God, and as Gita said, that the Virgin Mary was giving birth to that right idea. Okay.
She used the term must a lot.
A must a lot,
yes.
Always where the Christ comes in, there's much. Well, would you, should we try another reference? Let's do 40.
It says basically that the mortals must get the true idea.
Yes, yes, the mortals must get the true idea. That's, again, the sense of the Christ, isn't it?
She used the idea in sort of relative. She says a more spiritual idea. Well, later on, ideas are not more spiritual
than
others.
You begin, yes, you can hear that tone already, as you say. It's not the highest definition yet of idea, is it? It's breaking it in gently. Let's look at 43:15. That begins on, let's see, she talks here about how these brutal prosecutors, the treason and suicide of his betrayer, were overruled by divine love to the glorification of the man and of the true idea of God, which Jesus' persecutors had mocked and tried to slay. So again, she's talking about how these brutal persecutors, the treason and suicide of his betrayer, what happened? It was overruled by divine love to the glorification of the man and of the true idea of God, which Jesus' persecutors had mocked and tried to slay. I just kept hearing that over and over again, that the Christ idea was a true idea, and it shows here this is what his betrayers were trying to slay, was that right idea, that pure idea of God. The Christ is the pure idea of God. That's over and over again. They can't touch it.
They can't touch it.
It's all encompassing. They couldn't touch it. Let's try page 45:17. It's just the method. We just and pick up there where the idea is. Yes, I think that is. Let's try 46. Yeah, it is. It starts out in that paragraph, "Glory be to God and peace to the struggling hearts." Christ had rolled away the stone from the door of human hope and faith, and through the revelation and demonstration of life in God, hath elevated them to possible at-one-ment with the spiritual idea of man and his divine principle love. Okay, let's see, 47:5. After gaining, see again, the true idea of their glorified master, they became better healers, leaning no longer on matter, but on the divine principle of their work. The influx of light was sudden. It was sometimes an overwhelming power, as on the day of Pentecost. You hear, again, true idea, that Christ is that true, real, right idea at work. Okay, I think that is enough. So what we would do then in text interpretation, that's just what we would write down for that particular slot. We would say, well, from what we have read so far, we begin to see that the idea of God is always to get the true idea of God. That's what we're after in Atonement and Eucharist. What are we atoning with? We're atoning with what is the real idea, the right idea, the pure idea. And then she says, and Christ is that true, pure idea. And that it says, and we want to get the true idea of Christian healing and the true idea of what governs the universe. That's what we're after, the atonement of what is the true, real idea of God, man, the universe, and Christian healing. That's what our atonement is towards. That's what we desire to know. And that certainly is simple enough, but that's certainly big enough. We want not the belief. We don't want the mortal concept or the human concept, but we're only going to atone with the true, real idea concerning God, the universe, and mankind. Well, that certainly makes a lot of sense. Then we go on and see, well, there was no idea in relationship to the marriage chapter. But in part one of Christian Science versus Spiritualism, let's see those references. 71:2. Nothing is real and eternal. Nothing is spirit but God and His idea. Evil has no reality. It is neither person, place, nor thing, but is simply a belief, an illusion of material sense. Oh, this is isn't this wonderful? I think this is really the pith. This is so beautiful. Nothing is real and eternal. Nothing is spirit but God and His idea. That's Christian Science versus Spiritualism, all right. It's talking about the eternal reality is God and its idea. That would be Christian Science voicing the fact that nothing is real and eternal. And it should say nothing is spirit but God and its idea, as opposed to spiritualism, huh? So that seems to be very, very important. Let's go on to 71:5. The identity or idea of all reality continues forever, but spirit or the divine principle of all is not in spirit's formation. Soul is synonymous with spirit, God, the creative, governing, infinite principle outside of finite form, which forms only reflect. So the identity or idea of all reality. Do you see? Nothing is real and eternal. Nothing is spirit but God and His idea. Again, the identity or idea of all reality continues forever. So nothing is real but the God and His idea. That idea constitutes all reality, and it continues forever. Huh? Gosh, see, only the spirit is real, and spiritualism is unreal. That would certainly be that sense of spirit as the only, which, as we know in this Christian Science versus Spiritualism chapter, spiritualism, spirit is the overall writing tone. It certainly seems to be coming out. 76:6-17, starting on 15. Neither will man seem to be corporeal, but he will be an individual consciousness characterized by the divine spirit as idea, not matter. And then she goes on saying, suffering, sinning, dying beliefs are unreal, as if to say ideas are real and beliefs are unreal. Okay, part 2, 88:18. To love one's neighbor as oneself is a divine idea, but this idea can never be seen, felt, nor understood through the physical senses. Well, therefore, the idea is only real to the spiritual senses, isn't it? It is, and therefore, if the idea, therefore, can only be understood through spiritual sense, the spiritual sense sees the real idea. Physical sense must see an unreal belief, then.
It's the divine hologram and...
Yes. Yeah, you can see Christian Science versus Spiritualism there, that we have the idea is real as the divine hologram, and that the matter, substance, is unreal, huh? Spiritualism is unreal. Good. Then 90:25. The admission to... Oh, this is so beautiful. This has got to be one of the nicest reference, really, here on where it says, the admissions to oneself that man is God's own likeness sets man free to master the infinite idea. This conviction shuts the door on death and opens it wide towards immortality. Again, that tone of spirit, that line of demarcation, the idea is real, The only is eternal reality. Nothing is real and eternal than the idea, and by implication, then the beliefs are unreal. That certainly is brought out here, isn't it? That the admission to oneself, that man is God's own likeness, the admission to ourselves that man, as God's own likeness, is real, is the eternal reality. That's what we have to admit to ourselves, that only idea is real, see, and natural. We always have felt along the line that that beliefs were natural. To be sick was natural, to be sinning was natural, to be imperfect was natural. But here we see, no, that the idea is real and it's natural. And if we admit to ourselves that man is God's own likeness, look what it does. It sets us free to master the infinite idea and to master really there at that sense is to partake of it as an experience. To master at the point of soul is really that sense that it becomes one's identity, doesn't it? It sets man free to master the idea, to experience the infinite idea. To be a master over it is to experience it as a journey. Gosh, isn't that terrific? So it only says all we have to do is to admit to ourselves. We don't even have to make it such. We just have to admit that we're God's own likeness. And that will set us free to master the infinite idea. This conviction shuts the door on death. Think of it. Think of man's responsibility. Being doesn't ask for really that much of us. It only says admit it, claim it, let it into your life. It isn't the condemnation of Adam to till the ground. It's, as Dave says, it's very gentle, really. It's not the demands of the of God are just on man. All you have to do is admit that you're God's idea, and look what you get. You're set free to master the infinite idea, and at the same time, you identify with only ideas being real and true. When you draw your line of demarcation and you focus only on what is real and true, then that shuts the door on death and opens it towards immortality. Gee, you hear that whole sense of spirit. That's wonderful. Yes.
The admission is not an ambi-pambi thing because
no.
It refers to this conviction.
Yes. Yes. That's quite good, that sense of spirit, huh? That strength of spirit. To draw, and it is strength, and it is a struggle, isn't it? All those qualities of spirit. It isn't that easy, I think, what is being brought out here, that admission is a conviction, which says, all right, that the point of spirit, it takes conviction to draw the line between what is real and what is unreal. And so therefore, yes, that's true. What is in the conviction is therefore that strength of spirit. It does take strength, yes, to draw the line of demarcation between what is real and what is unreal, to turn away from what is unreal to what is real, and to focus on the real idea. And when we do that, it shuts the door on death. We turn away from death, and it opens it towards the real idea and immortality.
Mm-hmm. And Joel, don't we have to understand what they mean, that we are in God's own likeness, that we can stand there and look at them and say, God's own likeness?
Yes. Doesn't do a thing, does it? So at this point here, at the journey where we are in this Christian Science versus spiritualism, we are beginning to see at that point of well, there's nothing in, as concerning idea in prayer, but in Atonement and Eucharist, if we see that the idea of God is to get the true idea, that we atone ourselves with the true idea of God, And that what we are atoning with is the Christ as the true idea of God, which is we're atoning with the true idea of God, the universe, including man. And now that atonement is such that it demands of us to admit that we're God's own likeness. In atonement and Eucharist, see, along the path we're gaining what the true idea is through the textbook, isn't it? So at this point of Christian Science versus Spiritualism, I guess, Sandy, you want to bring out that it isn't such that we're atoning just with what you want to bring out, a feeling of what God is, or you want to say there that...
That it's really important to get that clear idea of what God is that we're learning along, because if you were to go up to someone and just say, you know, you're a child, an idea of God without understanding that spiritual foundation that's being laid there,
yes,
it doesn't have the impact that you need to carry that conviction to make all those false beliefs fall away.
Right, right. So just at the place value here of the chapter of Christian Science versus Spiritualism, Sandy feels that at this point we would know, I mean, we would have the conviction to admit to ourselves that we're God's own likeness because of where we are, that Mrs. Eddy would have explained to us what it means to be God's idea, huh?
Right.
What it means. And that happens in Atonement and Eucharist. We can see there that she shows us at that point what is the true idea of God. What is the true idea of the universe? What is the true idea of man, huh? As exemplified by Jesus. And therefore, the next point is, well, then we can draw that line of demarcation away from what is unreal and what is real, and we can admit to ourselves.